Could I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
This is 91.9 FM, KPTZ, in Port Townsend, and this is Attention Please. I'm your host this week, Jim Burke, and I spoke recently with Willie Bentz, the Director of Emergency Management of Jefferson County. I spoke recently with Flavia Heineman, the Chair of the Chimicum Arts and Crafts Fair, and the Fair Coordinator, Tammy Robacher, about the upcoming fair on December 10th and 11th, and here's the interview with them. Good morning.
Good morning.
So who wants to start and tell me all about the Chimicum Arts and Crafts Fair? Flavia? Or Flavia wants to start. Okay.
So the fair started 36 years ago, and we're celebrating our 35th because we were down for a year for COVID.
Oh.
We started out very humbly in the multipurpose building with about 18 vendors, and each year we've grown and grown and grown till now that sometimes we have over 100 vendors. This year we're not having over 100 vendors. We had to cut back quite a bit because we have too many talented artisans in our county, in our community, that produces jewelry. And since this is not a jewelry fair, we had to say no to quite a few of these people whose work is exquisite. So maybe in the future there should be a jewelry show. I don't know.
Oh. Intriguing prospect.
It is.
And what is the Chimicum Arts and Crafts Fair raise money for?
We raise money for the unmet student needs at Chimicum Junior Senior High School. And we also support other schools in our region from Port Townsend. We've supported Port Townsend Music, Quill Scene, their garden club, Brennan. And all they have to do is get on our website and submit on the grant page and fill that in. And we talk about it after we've taken care of the needs of our Chimicum school.
So I was looking at the website. I noticed a few pictures from, I guess, from last year. Mm-hmm. You have a coffee wagon outside. Is that right? Gypsy Coffee?
Gypsy
Tammy's,
Coffee.
She's pointing to Tammy now. Tammy, tell me about that.
Yeah, Gypsy Coffee has been one of our consistent vendors. Mm-hmm. This year we also have our local students in our school are doing concessions for fair. So that's a first, that where our kids are actually working in the kitchen and doing concessions. It is going to be a cash only for concessions this year, so I wanted to get that out there.
That's important. Yeah. So when people come, what is the date of the, or what are the dates of the Arts and Crafts Fair?
The 10th and 11th.
10th and 11th.
And Saturday, Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Saturday is 9 to 4, and Sunday is 10 to 3.
Cool. And it's at the Chimicum High School?
Yes.
Yes.
It's in the commons and in the gym.
And so you have 100 vendors or almost 100 vendors?
We have, I believe, 78 vendors this year.
And the arts and crafts they run the gamut.
They do. We have Jenny, the person who makes leather belts, which is great for the man. And the guy always needs a new belt, right?
And then
we have, you know, one of my favorite person is Maggie Smith and her daughter Shelby, and they make blown glass earrings.
Oh, wow. Beautiful.
Soap vendors from, we've got a soap vendor coming in from Kadoma Farm, and Felicia Allen has been there for years doing goat milk soap.
Wow.
let's see, artists. We've got another guy thing, this person coming in from the Seattle area, and he does 3D artwork maps of Puget Sound.
Oh, I've seen those.
And those are exquisite. Last year when my son came, he goes, oh, thank goodness you finally got something in here that a guy can appreciate.
I saw them at the Wooden Boat Festival.
Well,
he had them at the Wooden Boat Festival. And of course, there were a lot of boaters there who were like, oh, wow, I love it. Puget Sound.
Yeah.
Seattle. The whole area. It's fantastic. And I've also seen pictures of ceramicists.
Yeah, we've got a few Coming in, we've got from Port Orchard. We've got Todd from Chimicum. My granddaughter was at my house the other day, and she said, "Oh, Grandma, do you think I can have Todd make me a special mug? Because I had him make her one when she was a baby, and she uses it all the time. She's still using it." Mm-hmm. And so she's designing her own. I haven't talked to Todd about it yet, but he may be in for a surprise.
That's adorable. Is the mug just too small for her now?
She would like something a little bit bigger, yes. Yeah,
a little better for larger hand now.
Yeah,
that's so cute. So, Tammy, what else do you have? What else do you want to tell me about the Chimicum Arts and Grass Fair?
So I just wanted to note that this year, the 35th year, marks over $500,000 given back to our local schools.
Wow.
So that's a big one. And the other big one is our poster is student-submitted art. So,
oh, wow. Got that right here. Yeah. I wish you could see it on the radio. It's beautiful. It's got a cat with a paintbrush in his mouth. It's adorable.
Lila Franzen.
Who is it?
This year's poster, the winner was Lila Franzen.
Lila Franzen.
And they are picked blind. We look at the submissions and we refer to the posters, whatever's in them. So that was the cat.
Right.
And the cat won. We had no names attached.
Uh-huh.
So Lila's grandmother has taught for Chimicum Schools for years. She taught kindergarten and recently retired.
Sweet. Well, it's a beautiful art piece. Yeah. It's a great poster. And it's very Christmassy, too. So it's part, you know, it's all part of the season.
Yes.
So when people come to the Chimicum Arts and Crafts Fair, they can expect to pay a small fee to get in. Right? Just a small fee. And I'm sure that helps defray the cost of actually mounting the thing. Plus, it also continues to help support the schools. Oh, what is the website, by the way?
ChimicumArtsAndCraftsFair.com.
That's pretty
and
simple.
And our email address is...
Crafts.com.
Crafts. Oh, it's got no an fair. S at the end of it.
Oh, ChimicumCrafts.com. ChimicumCrafts.com. And on the website, you can see things like they raise money for school programs. The home and their focus is Chimicum Schools, but they consider other projects that benefit other public schools. They support the local makers economy. They provide a marketplace for youth and nonprofit program fundraisers, and they are building community. And in the last 35 years, as Tammy said, you've raised $500,000 that you've passed along to schools and school groups in East Jefferson County. That's fantastic.
And I'd like to add one more thing.
Please.
And just speaking of building community, we have the Chimicum Corner, the farm stand in Chimicum.
Yes.
And they're going to be doing this weekend. It definitely is a Chimicum weekend. They're going to be doing a wine tasting from 10 to 4.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's both days.
Right. Something you can't do at the high school.
Exactly. And they're also supporting. They're supporting the craft fair in any way they can.
Uh-huh.
We've got Finn River, and they're going to be doing something very interesting, which is holding sort of like a children's fair where you can bring a child and they'll have vendors there who are going to teach the child how to make.
Oh, a maker's fair.
A maker for a nominal fee.
For a nominal fee.
The children will be making and taking home gifts.
That's fantastic.
And then we've got our Chimicum. I just lost it there. You're going to have to definitely add this one out.
That's one of the things about laughter.
Yeah.
It just puts thoughts right out of our heads, you know. But laughter is good medicine, so that's fine. Tammy, do you know what she was trying to say?
No, she doesn't. The restaurant there in Chimicum, our coffee shop.
Farms Reach?
Farms Reach.
Thank you. They're back in business.
Farms Reach is back. I really missed them when they were gone.
Yeah, I know. Everybody was so upset about that.
Yeah. So anyway, Farms Reach, I'm sure they'll have something planned. In the past, they've always had, like, they ramped up for breakfast and things like that.
Okay. So there's a lot of crossover things happening in Chimicum.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're all looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Flavia and Tammy, for joining me talking about the Chimicum Arts and Crafts Fair. You can go to chimicumarts.com.
Yes.
And find out more about it. And you can go there and have a fabulous time on December
10th and 11th.
10th and 11th.
10th and 11th. And on Saturday, the 10th, it's from
9 to 4.
Uh-huh. And on Sunday, the 11th, it's
10 to 3.
All right. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Come get in the holiday spirit.
Yes. Thanks so much for joining me. Next, we have the Director of Emergency Management for Jefferson County, Willie Bentz, talking about the recent windstorm and how you can prepare for the next disaster with your disaster prep kit. I'm here with Willie Bentz, Director of the Department of Emergency Management for Jefferson County. Hello, Willie. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So first, let's get a few things out of the way. This is going to air on December 5th. We just recently had a very serious wind emergency. How did the Department of Emergency Management weather that?
No pun intended. So we started monitoring the wind event just a couple days before. The National Weather Service out in Seattle does a lot of really excellent work in helping forecast events like these, looping in local public safety officials. So they were providing us briefings days in advance, kind of letting us know what the best case scenario, what the worst case scenario might look like, and then what we could really kind of expect on average. Friday, we were monitoring really closely. We weren't expecting what ended up happening Friday night, which was definitely closer to the worst end scenario of the spectrum. Late Friday night, as wind speeds started picking up, we activated the Emergency Operations Center at about 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. So the Emergency Operations Center, it's the place where public safety officials kind of get together to form a cohesive team from their different parts and really work together as a unit to solve a common problem. In this case, you know, high wind speeds causing power outages, road closures throughout the county. So a few of us activated into the Emergency Operations Center in Port Hadlock. Jeffcom 911 was getting overwhelmed with calls. We were helping answer a few of the calls from the general public that were non-life-threatening emergency. Our county public works department was there, specifically roads. They were working really closely together with our PUD representative to help, you know, prioritize whose crews were going where. There were lines involved. Obviously, that would be PUD's responsibility. Otherwise, roads would do what they can to clear everything else.
Right.
And really just coordinate the response to an event that required, you know, a level of coordination beyond our day-to-day work. So that's when the EOC stands up to help out.
Right. So by about 2:30 in the morning on Saturday morning, I know that I had power, but I'm in Port Townsend, and I guess about a quarter of the power was restored, I think, at that point in the county. And then the rest of the power got restored over the next, 5 days?
Just about. And it was very incremental because there were transmission lines that were out of service. One thing that was really difficult for PUD was that they were out both in the process of restoring lines, they would find additional damage. So they could never really guarantee what was going to come on next. Because as they'd bring things up, they would have to conduct additional testing and again, sometimes would find additional issues.
Yeah, I understand that Maristone had power and then it had got yanked away again because of something like that.
Yep. And one of our DEM staff, for example, who lives in Port Hadlock, they texted me, you know, hey, I have power on. I'm, you know, very excited. And then 10 minutes later, back out again. And that's just, you know, the nature of the beast for something that caused so much damage to a system as complex as our public utilities.
Right. So the county declared a public emergency because of this weather event. Did the state follow suit? And did they do an emergency declaration for the state or for Western Washington after that?
Not as of yet. Started that process working with the State Emergency Management Division, doing something called a preliminary damage assessment, where we submit all of our damage reports, specifically the total cash value of all the response costs and damages.
Right.
So with any luck, sometime in early December, we'll have that to the state. They'll review the data, maybe perform some site visits and some visits in the field to assess. Mm-hmm. And then ideally they go to FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, to request a federal declaration, which means we'd get some money reimbursed.
Oh, so some money from the federal government as well as the state.
Yep, it's about the cost share is about 90% from the federal government. They've actually upped that recently. It used to be 75%. Sometimes the state would pick up 12.5%, and then the local jurisdictions would pick up 12.5%. So with any luck, we'll get 90% from the feds, and then we're not quite sure what the state will opt to do in that situation. Okay. So fingers crossed there.
Well, that's amazing. That's amazing. This is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Attention Please. And speaking of power outages, so obviously when it became one day for some people and 2 days and 3 days and 4 days, What is the best, what's the simplest thing that people can do if they're without power for many days and they just don't happen to have a generator, for example?
You really have to think of it like camping in your home, doing without the modern conveniences, cooking using, one of those classic propane camp stove, camp stoves or the like. I'm using alternative light sources, flashlights. We really do recommend battery-operated lanterns and lamps.
As opposed to candles and oil lamps?
Exactly. Right. That do represent flame hazards.
Because there might be more events than the fire department can handle.
Exactly.
In a situation like this.
Exactly. Right. We don't want it to become a disaster within a disaster.
That makes sense.
So really think of it like camping in your home. Figure out how you can survive without the modern conveniences you're used to every day. The most difficult part, there are two difficult things during a long-term power outage. That's obviously heating. A lot of folks are dependent on electric heat. They might not have wood stoves to heat their homes, as well as folks who might have medical vulnerabilities where they might require electricity. They might be oxygen dependent, things like that. Mm-hmm. So there are resources available on ready.gov, on our website and things like that give you some advice on how to deal with those situations. One thing that we would really recommend, though, is we have a group called NPREP, or Neighborhood Preparedness. Mm-hmm. That's a partnership with Local 2020 that encourages folks to meet their neighbors and talk about a neighborhood-wide disaster plan and how you can help one another.
Right.
And I know in some neighborhoods, your neighbors might have a large generator. They might, let you in for a little while to warm up, maybe help you even cook a hot meal, things like that. So talk to your neighbors. Talk about how you can help them and they can help you. And then otherwise, during a long-term outage like this, think of it as camping in your home and really look to address some of those situations where you might not have heat, you might have access to electricity for your medical needs.
Well, that's helpful stuff. So let's talk about disaster supply kits. I went to the county website and the Department of Emergency Management, and I went to the library. And I found all kinds of printouts that I could print out, so I started printing things out like mad. Do you have a personal go bag?
I have a go bag in my car, bag at home. I don't carry one with me every single place I go, phone, keys, wallet, that kind of fun stuff. You certainly should have a go kit in your car, especially if you travel a lot.
Yeah.
Things like that can even be helpful if you're stuck on the other side of the bridge late at night
as
the canal bridge closes. And maybe you want a snack.
Right.
Things like that can even help you out. But certainly think about having one at work, especially if you work at the kind of job where if you work far enough away where you may be stuck there for a while, during a snow event, after an earthquake, things like that. Or if you work a public safety or another essential worker type job where you may be asked to come in for extended periods of time.
Right.
So those go kits just allow you to be flexible and give you just a little bit of reassurance that you'll be ready wherever you may be when disaster strikes, especially if you do have to move into or out of the area relatively quickly.
Right. And I was thinking that would be the most basic basics, like some kind of separate light from your phone as a flashlight, some water, a protein bar or two, or some kind of snack to get you through to the next place. Any other things in a small go bag that you would think of?
Around here, a packable rain jacket or some kind of warm clothes. You never know when you'll be stuck out in the elements.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that...
Gloves.
I think gloves. I think it's really easy to see, if your car breaks down in the middle of December or if you're stuck during a bridge closure and you're low on gas or something like that. Yeah, having a few extra warm clothes would be helpful. So we don't even need to think about a catastrophic situation.
Right.
This is all kind of basic resilience that might help us when things don't go quite as planned.
Do you find that people who do practice that kind of resilience, that they're ready when something bigger happens? They're more ready because they're sort of practicing as they go?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a big believer in the 1% better, where you make those small little changes and they add up over time. It's really difficult to improve at something and be twice as good instantaneously. But if you do 1% here, 1% there, that's all going to build up. And so if you make those small little tweaks that don't seem like much, all of a sudden you may be twice as prepared as you were before. And it just wasn't as intimidating or difficult.
Interesting. That's a good philosophy for life in general, it sounds like. All right. So the bucket disaster supply kit items, I'm just going to read some of these really fast. This would be in a 5-gallon bucket that you could put in your car. A NOAA weather radio with tone alert and a pocket radio, possibly something with a crank, I assume. Flashlight with extra batteries, matches, a lighter or a fire starter, a knife like a Swiss Army knife, a first aid kit, duct tape, masks, N95 masks, a 5-gallon bucket with toilet paper and plastic garbage bags. I think I know what that's for. Latex gloves. I think I know what those are for, too. Air horn or whistle. Okay, so those first things, those sound almost like the 10 essentials when you're camping. A lot of my friends who go skiing, they have duct tape wrapped around their ski poles for when a pole gets bent and you have to suddenly fix it on the trail because they do backcountry skiing. And all those other things sound pretty simple and pretty straightforward. But then when we get down to things like MREs, meals ready to eat or freeze-dried meal packets, disaster food. Costco has whole shelves of it, like big buckets of, you know, this is 100 meals for a family of four for a month. And it's like $300 or $400 or something like that for your something to put in your basement. Do you think it's necessary for people to go crazy that way in terms of preparing for some kind of a disaster to just bring in pounds and pounds of freeze-dried food for their car or their garage?
I'll be the first to say I'm no fan of those kinds of MREs, and I don't have any myself.
Okay.
There is a lot of actually pretty decent food for backpackers and hikers and bike tourists and things like that that may be a little bit more expensive, but you can find pretty decent deals on it. And in terms of food, anything that's easy to prepare doesn't require a lot of water or a lot of cook time. Things like, you know, top ramen, things of that nature are pretty cheap, pretty easy to make, and are a wholly decent substitute for those all-in-one MREs.
Right.
We do recommend, though, after a major Cascadia subduction zone earthquake, we're going to be without services for a decent period of time. That event is going to affect the entire West Coast, so Vancouver, BC, Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon. I mean, help is all going to go to those major metropolitan areas before it comes out to us. Right. So we do recommend folks, if at all possible, prepare to live on their own for 30 days and be ready, 30 days ready after a major event.
A full month.
A full month. And we know that's not doable for everyone. So 30 days is the ideal. That's what we hope folks strive for. 2 weeks is still pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to do that, that is excellent as well.
Right.
But we really look for folks to try to prepare for a 3-day minimum.
Okay.
So have a disaster kit for 3 days with, you know, outgoing to the store, cooking without electricity, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And the thing is a lot of folks, one of the problems with buying MREs is you don't want to eat those outside of a time of duress or after a major disaster.
Right.
You don't want to just sit around the table and eat those on family night. But if you purchase things that you like to eat and stash those in your disaster kit, when it comes time, when they're getting ready to expire, you've had them for a while, you can still eat them, enjoy them, and just swap them out with a newer, fresher variety.
Right.
So you're never really, you know, spending money and losing it if there's not a disaster.
Yeah.
It's just some additional food that you have stashed away that you're going to eat anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Another few items in this bucket. And I guess in some cases, people wouldn't be able to get back into their homes because if there's an earthquake, there might be a collapse there. Home might be, they might not even be able to open the door, or that it just might be condemned. You can't go in there. It's too dangerous. Emergency blanket, like a solar reflective blanket, like one of those space blankets they used to call them.
Exactly.
Lightweight, compact. You could even put that in your small go kit, I suppose. A tarp. So any, like a 6x8 tarp or something like that, something that you could put down on the ground or cover yourself with if you need to. Rope. You could tie up a shelter. White hand towel. Why a white hand towel? I'm just curious.
I don't think the color actually matters specifically, but being able to clean stuff up, stuff up certainly would help.
A pair of work gloves, of course, and a bottle of drinking water for immediate thirst. So in there, you don't actually have a water filter or something to make water potable.
Having water on hand is obviously preferable since you don't have to seek out a source from there. Right. But having a water filter, certainly a good tool in the toolbox. Mm-hmm. I specifically like there is a, they call it a life straw that actually lets you drink directly from the source.
Oh, right.
They're small. They're only about $20. Mm-hmm. And you can drink from creeks, streams, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there are plenty of filtration options out there. So if at all possible, carry that water with you or have that in your kit. But filtration is certainly an adequate substitute if you know where you're going to be able to get it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And then quick thing, there's a portable pet disaster supply kit checklist as well, which is something that people might not think about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if your dog or your cats and you have to take them with you and you can't get back to your house for a while? Collar or harness with IDs and license attached, leash, medications, medical records, food and water with a bowl and a can opener if you need a can opener, a favorite pet toy, tag with your veterinarian's name and phone number, a tag with your contact name, phone number, and address outside the area in case you are separated from your pet, a tag with pet's name and owner's name, phone number, and address. I think that's all a bit redundant, but small plastic bags for collection of pet waste. Don't need to be a slob just because there's a disaster going on. A recent picture of you and your pet placed inside the pet carrier in a Ziploc bag, which I think is adorable. But it's also, it makes a lot of sense because if somebody finds this cat or dog in a carrier, they go, oh, look, this is mm-hmm. Jim and he's missing his cat buddy. Let's see if we can reunite them. A hand towel, portable kennel, large enough for your pet to stand, turn around and lie down comfortably. Mm-hmm. So that's a really useful thing. So the Jefferson County website, if you go to the Department of Emergency Management page, there is a link to something called the library, and it has all kinds of information about all of these things. So you can make your own kit, big or small, for whatever disaster comes up. Willie, is there anything I missed? I'm sure plenty.
No, this was an excellent overview. You know, I would just add to folks out there, you know, it seems kind of intimidating when you're talking about buying all this stuff, yeah. talking about a catastrophic earthquake. You know, and I certainly, you know, and even as the director of the Department of Emergency Management, you don't have to spend every waking moment being right. scared of this happening yeah. and, you know, drain your savings to build these kits. Just chip away at these things.
Right.
You know, every time you go to the grocery store, maybe another can of soup for your emergency kit. Maybe, you know, for Christmas, you buy each other, you know, a new flashlight, a new pocket knife, mm-hmm. things like that to throw in the kit.
That makes sense.
Start talking to your neighbors. Start talking through these right. kind of things. And, you know, it's really about building a culture of resilience and a resilient community. So we just need to chip away at it. This power outage and this windstorm we had was a good example of what could happen.
It was a good wake-up call, wasn't it?
It was a wake-up call, and it was just a little taste yeah. of what a Cascadia earthquake could potentially look like.
I thought it would also be good to air this during the winter because, you know, people are sitting around, they're watching a football game or whatever, and they're just like, they've got idle hands. They're mm-hmm. at home. They're inside a lot. You can start to put things together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by spring, you might actually have your complete go kit, either your bucket in your car or a bag that you just carry around with you.
Exactly.
Willie, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Me too. Thanks.
Thank you.
The Chimicum Arts and Crafts Fair is December 10th and 11th. You can find out more about it at chimicumarts.com. And if you go to co.jefferson.wa.us and click on Department of Emergency Management, you can go to the reference library there. You can find checklists for all the things that Willie Benz and I spoke about. Thank you for joining us on KPTZ 91.9 FM. Attention, please. I've been your host this week, Jim Burke. Attention, please airs at noon and 5 p.m. on Mondays and at noon on Saturdays. Thanks for joining us.